This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Well, hi and welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know what? This is one of my favorite topics to talk about, and that's teaching science outside of the box and even outside of the book. Now, I'm not saying we're going to check all the books because that wouldn't be totally truthful, but I'm talking about thinking of teaching science in some different ways than maybe you're familiar with or even more comfortable with. Well, many of you think I'm referring to nature studies when I'm talking about this, especially with the word outside. But let me say, while I love nature studies and I plan to do another show on this aspect of teaching science, I want to talk about earth science and geology today. And one of the reasons is because not only does it focus on a fascinating area of our world, but there are just so many elements you can learn and have your children learn about with you. So when I'm talking about, you know, teaching science, I'm really discussing some elements that are in my book, Teaching Science and Having Fun. And let me just say, I'm giving you a little disclaimer here, that I really disliked science as an educator, as a homeschool parent, and as a child myself. And so it really took my kids loving anything that was, you know, in fact, out in nature, or they'd pick up a rock while we were nature walking on a trip up north, and they would say, you know, what kind of rock is this, Mom? Or, you know, what does this critter eat or that? And I was at a loss. I had no idea how to answer all of their questions. But really what I did was I looked at them, and they were so excited and so animated. And I started thinking, wow, you know, when we talk about science at home, or I pull out the textbook or a workbook that I found, they're not as enthusiastic, and they kind of, you know, they do what they're supposed to do, but they're, you know, a little shoulder slump, or they're not as excited as they are. And so I'm going to be bold here, and I'm going to make a declaration. I have seen this over the years of homeschooling, which I started homeschooling in 1986, and I've been an educator for many years, a couple of years before that, but for many years with homeschooling experience and teaching workshops and things like that. And I have ran into more children than I can count that have come up to me and said, you know, I'm sorry, Mrs. Gerwitz, but I just hate science. And I'm going to make this bold proclamation that if you want your children to hate science, just teach them exclusively out of a book. You know, at some point, you know, especially if your child is college bound, there are going to be some things that you are going to want to cover, and a textbook is going to be your book of choice. I have used them. So please don't think that I'm totally anti-textbook. I'm really talking about the younger grades here, and I'm talking about children who may have been brought home that didn't start in home education, as well as those who may be in high school, but you want them to learn some elements, perhaps, that they did not learn, and that is in the line of investigative science in their school setting. And one of the reasons that they really can't learn that in the school setting is it doesn't give a child a lot of leeway to be able to, you know, get excited and explore and ask a lot of questions, because there just isn't time for that in a school setting. In a homeschool setting, unfortunately, a lot of times we mold our school day similar to what we learned in school. And while many of you are probably more up on homeschooling than I was when I started, because that's exactly what I did as a, you know, school teacher, I thought, well, there's no problem. Instead of having a classroom of 20 children, I'm going to have a classroom of 2 and they're little, and, you know, this is going to be really fun. Well, I soon found that it was anything but fun. And in fact, I had put my daughter in a preschool so I could work one-on-one with my son who had some learning challenges. And I was trying to see, I took him out of school mid-year, a preschool that had a kindergarten program. And I decided, you know, I'm going to take this year and I am going to look to see if this is something that we can do at home. And so it was a 6-month test, and I'm telling you what, we never looked back. And had a very successful run of homeschooling my 2 older ones and now my 3 younger ones, and I'm graduating another student this year. So in our home, you know, there have been anywhere from, you know, 1 to 5 children all homeschooling at the same time and everything from high school to kindergarten. So it's been a zoo. But what I will say that we have done is we have always taught up to what the older child is doing. So in other words, when my daughter was taking a biology course in high school homeschooling, then I did a lot of biology-related types of activities with the younger kids. So in essence, it wasn't so much of dividing and having so many different grade levels that, you know, you're stuck at the end of the day with a bunch of papers to grade. And that is overwhelming for any family. And so what I want to encourage you about in this talk is that, especially if you have anywhere from, you know, the young ones to elementary to middle school years, even to high school years, I want you to consider some of these aspects, and I am going to make another bold proclamation, and that is that if you teach science in this way that I'm going to outline, you are going to have kids who are thinking in such an amazing manner. They're going to be asking these really high-level questions. They're going to be delving into things not because you're making them, but because they want to learn, and they're going to be getting excited and, dare I say, dirty in the process. So let's go to one of the things that I list in my book. Oh, and if you're listening to this audio, there is a handout that I included with the audio, some printables that you can use if you're interested in journaling, and just some of the pages I pulled from my book that have different segments on what you can do, you know, to record what you find at home. So in my book, I have a chapter called, Okay, I'm Convinced, Now What? So I go into, in the first couple of chapters, specifically, you know, some of the jargon of why scientific discovery is so important, especially in what I'm laying out, not so much in reading the book. Again, I want to preface this with, I love snuggling up in bed and reading with my kids, especially when they're younger in the morning. There's nothing quite like, you know, having a cup of coffee and having little ones that are, you know, enthusiastically listening to something we're reading. And I think that's great for literature or, you know, even your Bible studies or something like that. But for science, you're going to lose them if you are not somewhere where they can either draw what you're talking about or take notes or go and do something that they've discussed in the book. And so what I've done in this book is I've broken up the science topics into subcategories. And for the purpose of the study, we're going to talk about earth science, astronomy, biology, and chemistry. And I go through and give a little thumbnail sketch, and let me do that for you right now. You know, with earth study, it's the study of geology, what the earth or the celestial body is made up of and what it contains, like when you talk about the earth and the core and the mantle and so forth. And it focuses on origins, structure, and physical phenomena, such as weather and volcanoes. Now, in our book on creation geology, we discussed very lightly a segment on weather. In fact, we had always hoped to have a weather creation science study that we never did write, but there are some great books buy master books that cover weather, and I've listed them in my book. I have a whole section of books that I recommend. Astronomy is the study of matter, things in space such as motion, composition, dimensions, and distance, and again, origins. And you can see why our focus in writing the books was creation, because what we found, especially I found, is that an understanding of origins is important to a child who is going to be bombarded with evolution on every, you know, in everything that they view on television, any kind of documentary, or anything that you find in the library. And so it's very difficult at the beginning, you know, to discuss this, because you don't want to say, you know, okay, well, this book is all great up until this point, because, you know, here they're talking about evolution and they're lying and we're not going to believe that. I found when my kids were really young and I did that, you know, and I'm hoping you can learn from my mistakes, therefore the show Vintage Homeschool Mom. But, you know, I found that my kids then, when they were reading the Bible, said, "Mom, is there any part in here that we're not supposed to believe?" And I was shocked. And, you know, when they're little, they say the most precocious things, don't they? What it really opened my mind, you know, and my eyes to the fact that I had been teaching that to them, because, you know, at that point, we really didn't have internet. I know, gasp, right? And you couldn't just jump online and find all kinds of information or misinformation at the click of a button. You know, you actually had to go get books and go to the library and, you know, look for documentaries on TV. And if you didn't get cable, then you were out of luck. You know, you just didn't get the, you know, some of these channels that had that kind of scientific information. So I found that I had to say to the children, no, the Bible is infallible. It is the Word of God. We are to take everything in the Bible as truth. But when we're studying things written by people that, you know, have a different worldview, then we have to realize that those books are going to be from that worldview. Just like someone would pick up one of my books and it's entitled Creation Science, a Study Guide to Creation, or Creation Geology, that's a study guide to the fossil, the floods, the fossils, and formations. You're not going to say, wow, I wonder if this book is from an evolutionary point of view, you know, because you're going to find it has both, but you're shown it side by side, and you're shown the creation aspect of it. So therefore, when you go to a library and you pull books out, that's what you're going to get. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that so many people flock to books that are already written, because you can be guaranteed, especially if you know the author's perspective, that that's going to be a safe bet. But I'm also going to guarantee you that you're not going to have kids who really are excited about science. And if they are excited about science and you are reading to them out of a textbook, I'm going to ask you a question, and that is, are you doing some supplemental things? Are you going on nature walks? Do you have a membership to a museum? Are you having your kids create collections? Like, are they collecting rocks, or, you know, taking pictures of different types of trees and putting them in an album, or drawing the things that they observe, you know, on a nature walk? And so, you know, these are the kinds of things that get the kids excited. When my children were young, one of the things we would do is look at the clock. Sometimes it's like 3 in the afternoon, that time when everybody's kind of grouchy, or, you know, even if they've woken up from a nap, they're not, you know, extremely happy campers. I had one of those out of the 5, but for the most part, they're a little bit grumpy, and, you know, and I'm thinking, gosh, dinner's still 2 hours away, and Dad doesn't get home for a while, and what are we going to do? So I would just say to the kids, okay, let's go outdoors, and I would give them all bags from the grocery store, just small little bags, and I would just have them collect things, and it could even be a blade of grass, a dried out leaf, you know, a feather. I'm really careful with bird feathers. So, you know, take along a little sandwich bag they can use to stick their hand in and pick up some things. Yeah, you wouldn't believe I'm pretty germophobic when it comes to some things. But so, you know, pick up a leaf, pick up a piece of bark, and then bring them to an area that you've designated, you know, to look at these things. We do not live in a manicured yard by any means, so we have wonderful things to go and collect, and I still do this kind of thing with my grandkids. So we go out to the back porch, and we spread the things out, and I give them a big piece of construction paper and some glue, and I say, here we go. We're just going to make a collage of things you found. If they're older, they can write. And one of the things I found was that labels, those little address labels, work so great, and you can find them on sale all over the place. In fact, I found some on sale for $1 a pack, and I realized why, because they're really not for addresses. They don't work for that. They cut off half of our name. But anyway, now I know to use those for school. So we'll pull those out. And when the kids are little, I would write the words for them and just have them pull them out and just use them like stickers on their paper. And that was such a good way to, you know, do school in a fun manner and also to have something, you know, concrete that we could use. Okay, let's see. Biology, did I talk about biology? Biology is the study of all living things such as humans, plants, and animals, and this includes the structure, function, growth, and origins of all things, and it includes botany, zoology, ecology, and all that falls under those subdivisions. And then chemistry is the study of the makeup or composition, structure, properties, and reactions of matter. In other words, what things are made of and how they react with other things, and this includes atomic and molecular systems. And then last in my list was physics, and that is the study of matter and energy and the effects they have on each other. In other words, all the things around you and the energy they have. The subdivisions include sound, optics, thermodynamics, machines, electromagnetism, atomic and nuclear energy. So again, the subdivisions were earth science, astronomy, biology, chemistry, and physics. So let's say you want to pick one of those subdivisions and you're saying, okay, well, I don't know, you know, where to start, and, you know, you're giving me too many different categories, and, you know, if I pick up a textbook, it's going to be so much easier. And it will, but I'm going to tell you, one year we completed two textbooks. And the first year, I believe it was like a grade 3 level, they started with, you know, plants and animals. And so we finished it really quickly because, again, you know, I'm curriculum impaired and I can't even use my own curriculum the way it was designed. So, you know, we went through and I pulled out segments and we read different segments and we adapted it and so forth. And so we got to, I had the fourth grade book, excuse me. So I decided, well, I'll start the fourth grade, you know, because we're ready. And what did it start with? The same exact thing. I think textbook companies have gotten a little bit smarter, and now they don't do that anymore. But I was really disappointed because we had already covered that. And when I looked through the topics, I found the same thing, that many of those topics had already been covered. So, you know, this is something to consider when you are teaching from a textbook, that a lot of the topics in that grade level are going to be duplicated year after year. So it really is something to look at when you're teaching your children. And you can see that by selecting any one of the subcategories, you could spend many, many weeks exploring this. But what if you miss things? You know, what if they should be learning something that year and you're not covering it or there are holes? And that is probably the number one question I get from people when I do this talk. And so I am going to answer that question when we come back after this break.
My name is Felice Gerwitz, and I want to introduce you to my publishing company, Media Angels. I have a heart for homeschool families, and since 1994, I have poured my efforts into creating curriculum to support teaching science, especially from a creationist worldview to the homeschool community. My curriculum was selected by Kathy Duffy in her 101 Top Homeschool Picks. Another labor of love is a 3-book novel series specifically for homeschoolers with a creation focus, the Truth Seekers Mystery Series that I co-authored with my daughter Christina. Media Angels represents uncompromising quality, not only with books, but with an online homeschool convention and this ultimate homeschool radio network with amazing show hosts. Along with books, Media Angels has produced an American history and an American government video series, as well as a family Bible study, Homeschooling with Proverbs. It has been my pleasure to mentor countless homeschool families and missionaries worldwide. I also enjoy mentoring aspiring authors with one-on-one coaching and the Information in a Nutshell series. If we haven't met, please reach out. I'd love to help you on your homeschooling journey, or if you have a book, help you getting that into print. I can be found on social media and look forward to meeting you. You can reach me at mediaangels.com. Thanks so much, and hope to meet you soon.
Hi, and welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me. My name is Felice Gerwitz, and this is an episode of Vintage Homeschool Moms. And it's so funny because when I went through this talk, I thought, well, I'll keep it to under 30 minutes. And I don't think there's anything I can ever say that's under 30 minutes because I go off on tangents. So if I've done that in this recording, I want to apologize once again and say, you know, I wish that I was a little bit briefer, but I get really enthusiastic when I talk about some of these topics. So the question before we took our break was, what if I missed some things? You know, you're telling me, look, here are all these great subcategories, and I should be delving into, you know, geology, just what I wanted to talk a little bit about today, or, you know, astronomy or oceanography or whatever. And what if there are some gaps? What if there are some holes? And I'm going to tell you something that is a little known secret. In fact, I always laugh when I come up with these topics for show ideas. One of the things I want to come up with are little secrets that teachers don't want you to know. And that is that learning can pretty much be distilled into vocabulary. It really is an understanding what the words are for that subject. And I found that so much with science. And I feel like it's one of those life hacks, you know, you see those things that are bantered around or shared on pictures on social media. And like one of the things I saw that was hysterical was about a tennis ball, and you can count it, cut it in half and put little Google eyes on it. And it can do all these kinds of things, hold keys, hold a napkin, you know, hold letters to be mailed, things like that. Well, one of the things that I found is that, especially because I had a child that was special needs and really needed me to hone into what it was he needed to learn, was that if he learned the vocabulary of the topic, then he learned 90% of what he needed to know. Now, I couldn't just give them the vocabulary on a flashcard. In a perfect world, you know, maybe you can show your kids a bunch of flashcards and they're really great at, you know, having that rote memory thing going, and you would be able to, you know, go through that with them. But for me, it had to be demonstrated. So we would go over some vocabulary things, but I would have games like the fishing pole game where I'd have a, you know, a yardstick with a hole at the end and a string and a horseshoe magnet. And then I put paper clips on the vocabulary words and maybe have five out there because I couldn't overwhelm him with 25 of them, but just maybe five. And then he would pull that card up and have to tell me what it meant. And if he couldn't, then it went into his, we need to learn this more, or I would tell him the answer and we would put it back in the pile and go from there. You know, and I had some other games that I played, and I have an activity pack that goes along with both the creation and the geology book that has some games and things that we played. One of the things I list is a vocabulary, science vocabulary words for K through 3, and they're pretty simple. They're anywhere from things like, and they're in alphabetical order, abdomen, astronaut, backbone, you know, to things like vibration, vitamin, weight, you know. And you might say, you know, my kids know what vitamins are. They take vitamins every day. But when you ask them really what is in a vitamin, you'd be surprised at what they say. It's just like asking a kindergarten child, you know, how do you make pasta? And it's just hysterical, you know, what they would say in giving you a list of things. And so not only that, but a scope and sequence can help. And let me tell you what a scope and sequence is if you're not familiar with the term. A scope and sequence is a sequential order of progression of knowledge of what a typical, quote unquote, first, second, third grader should know or understand. And so what that, the way I came up with that was, first of all, emailing a lot of my friends back when I first wrote this book and said, okay, where's the best scope and sequence available per state? And so they gave me some ideas. And so I compiled this out of four of the best state national assessments, as well as some of the things that I found that I collected through the years of being an educator. And in my scope and sequence, I have left out some things that are considered mandatory by some of the states just because of preference. So you have to make your discretion on that type of thing. So, like, for example, under my scope and sequence for kindergarten, I would have focus on observation, grouping, and beginning experimentation, and the suggested framework would be under Earth and astronomy, biology, chemistry, and physics. So, you know, that would just be the things. Like, under chemistry, it could be something as simple as the identification of solids, you know. Under biology, the identification of common farm animals. You know, also under biology could be relationships of seeds to plants, you know, which is another subcategory, which is botany. So it's just a simplified, you know, version of, you know, what they need to know. And I think I did it more, not so much so that you could be a checklist person like my daughter who's made copies of these, and she's got them for each child in their books, and she's checked off the little boxes right next to it because that's how she is, you know, as a homeschool child. She was like that too. But also because I want to alleviate your fears that there is just so much that they have to know for that year that they're going to miss something. And again, there isn't, well, let me just put it this way. I know that there was someone recently that was talking about education, and, you know, I'm not totally on either side of the discussion of unschooling, because I think I'm just too, I don't know, too stressed about certain things that I haven't learned from my educational background. How's that? About just to let the kids explore anything that they're interested in. Because I know my children, and especially the things that they love, and I'm not so sure we'd ever get back on track. However, that is not at all what I am purporting here. What I am suggesting is that you can have a framework that you can go through and be able to educate your child in a way that is going to not only teach them about science, the world around them, but is also going to increase their vocabulary, their comprehension, their ability to write. And as I was saying just a minute ago, and to complete my thought, there was someone who was once saying that they could take a student who had been given a lot of opportunity to learn, and in a complete year, teach them everything they needed to know in high school. You know, and this is, of course, saying that this, you know, child didn't have any learning glitches and, you know, was open to this type of, you know, cramming of the information in a year. And I'm not, again, saying you should do that. I'm just saying we stress it so much, and believe me, I know where you're coming from. When I first began homeschooling, this lovely lady handed me a book on unit studies, and I just laughed and handed it back to her and said, this looks like too much work. And then I found out that with all of the books and textbooks that I was using with my children, that they really were not learning enthusiastically, and it was a real chore to get them to finish their schoolwork. Things were happening, and this is a clue to if your child is having some difficulties in your homeschool setting. Are the books getting lost? It is miraculous to me how books can be lost when you're not taking them from a school and bringing them in a backpack and taking them home. So we've had that, the black hole of the books getting lost. We've also had the emotional meltdowns, you know, whether it's you're giving me too much work or you didn't explain this or I need you to sit right here. And again, these are things that hopefully are only going to happen when they're younger. But they also happen when a child is either bored to tears or not totally engaged in what they're doing. Yes, we cannot be totally engaged in everything. You know, some aspects of grammar or spelling are not going to be the most exciting. And I'm going to tell you a little secret. I have never taught spelling, and I have pretty adequate spellers. I have done some remediation in spelling, but a lot of our spelling, again, comes from science. It comes from our vocabulary and our literature studies, and we're a big reading family, so we did a lot of family reading. So I would just, you know, recommend that, you know, you rethink your schooling. And one thing I'd like to mention is I want to invite you to listen to a broadcast that I did, and it's I'm always so bad at saying it exactly, but you can look for it on Vintage Homeschool Moms. If you listen on iTunes, you can probably search for my name under iTunes, Belise Gerwitz. But the title of the talk session radio show was, Is Homeschooling What You Do or Who You Are? And I had to go through a little test for that. You will be surprised because it talks about the concept of a lifelong learning. And I have always loved to learn despite school. I remember hating geography, and I kept saying, you know, geography and grammar. Yes, and I've written and published other people's books, you know, True Confessions here. But I hated those two topics because they were presented in the most boring way possible. You know, I'm not going to say I love grammar, but I have found programs that I love to use that have circumvented that hatred of it, especially in the traditional way it's normally taught. So I think that a lifelong love of learning can come if your child is an enthusiastic. And if you're listening to this and saying, you know, I get what you're saying, and that's how we are about history, and we just love history, it's so awesome, because that's what I'll say, that 90% of the kids who told me they hated science then told me they loved history. What's not to love about history? You've got action, you've got adventure, you've got, you know, things happening in the past that were the frontiers, you've got, you know, these great men that, you know, crafted the Constitution, you've got all of these wonderful elements of, you know, exploration and coming to the new world and, you know, the Egyptians and, you know, on and on. But it's not the same thing because you're not exploring. You are reading, you are digesting, you are learning about something that happened in the past. And while that's great, it's not the same thing as picking up a rock on a nature walk in North Carolina and showing it to your mom. And this rock, when it was picked up, was not an intact rock. It had been perfectly sliced through, as if someone had taken a knife and cut perfect little segments of it, and there it was completely together. And they picked it up and they said, wow, what kind of rock is this and how did this happen? So we could put that in a separate baggie, because yes, I carried like 100 little plastic bags within a plastic bag. I didn't take the box, a little sandwich bag everywhere we went. It was one of our staples in our backpack that we kept for the sole purpose of going on nature walks. Each child had one. And so, you know, in that, we put this rock, and then we got it home. We could talk about, okay, so where did we find this? Look, we found it on the side of a hill. Well, where did you find it in the hill? It was embedded in the dirt. Well, that dirt was sediment, and this hill had tremendous rainstorms. And these rainstorms must have come down for years to smooth out this rock and to also slice through it. And it didn't take millions of years, you know, because look at this road was a paved road. And so we know that a lot of this road had to have been excavated and moved in our lifetime anyway. So, you know, it was a fascinating study. Or when my parents went to Italy and brought my kids lava rock, and, you know, the pumice stone was so cool. And we could research that. We could pull out. We learned geography. We pulled out the map and found out where, you know, they were in Italy, where they found the stone. You know, we could get the whole family in on it when you're homeschooling. You know, if you go somewhere, bring us some stones. We're studying geology, you know, for the next 10 years. But, you know, we had so much fun with this, so much fun. And I set up a box, you know, those clear little fishing tackle boxes that have the little segments. Well, I found one that was clear. Most of them are opaque colored. And on the bottom of each of the boxes, I cut out a little number, and I numbered it from 1 to, you know, 21. I don't remember exactly how many little grids there were. I think it was 1 through 21. And then I purchased this little geology book on rocks that had different types of rocks and what, and, you know, a picture of them and something about them. And I purchased rocks that fit those descriptions. And that's what I gave my kids in a little bag. They were wrapped up when we went on a plane trip one year when we were going on vacation. And my children were separated from us and, you know, crossed the aisle. And there was an elderly man there who had the best time trying to help them identify the rocks, because I didn't tell them the answers. They got that a different time. They didn't actually get the box until we got home because it was too much to carry. They just got the rocks in the little book, and they had to try to match it and identify it. And, of course, the pictures in the book are, you know, you think, well, that would be really easy. It really wasn't that easy, especially as some of the rocks were a little bit more different. Like, I think the easiest one was the calcite to identify. And there was even an optical calcite that was super cool. But, you know, it was that kind of a thing, you know, that we had for years and that the kids used, and then they had the chart that they, after they worked on identifying it, they had to learn about it and where was it found and what kind of geologic landscape was it. And so there was so much to learn. We just are so enthusiastic about science, especially when we studied it in this format. You know, I made all those mistakes of thinking, you know, it's just going to be easier. And there is going to be a season. You know, my daughter was expecting, I think, her number 5, and she did a lot of unit studies. And I said, for this season, you know, here are some books that would be just really good reading. And, you know, this might be your season for just reading. And she did for the first month and a half. And then she said, we can't do it. She goes, I've lost a kid. You know, they're not listening. They're not enthusiastic. You know, they're doing cartwheels and handstands. And so one of the things I mentioned to her was the printables that I gave you, in this audio. If you go to the website at Vintage Homeschool Moms, there's a set of printables that you can use. And the kids, there's a box where they can draw their picture, and then if they can, you know, take notes and write some things, and they can take some notes about what you're saying, or you can write them on a marker board, and that's copy work that you're giving them to copy. So there's your handwriting. And that's one of the things that I tried to do with any subject that we taught as a unit study, was to fit in as many things as we possibly could that were, you know, on different topic areas. I was not going to do a separate handwriting course, a separate spelling course, a separate language arts course. Math, we did do a separate math book. And I don't know, do you have any math enthusiasts? I don't have any that absolutely love math. But you know, it was something that worked for us. And we definitely used a scientific method if we were doing any kind of experimentation. And it really helped them with their thought processes. It helped them to go through each thing and say, okay, here's my question. You know, I found this rock, and the problem that I'm trying to solve is, you know, how did these cuts perfectly happen? And I'm going to do some research to shed some light on this question, and I'm going to form a hypothesis or a solution or answer to the question, and I'm going to try to recreate the experiment. Now, you're obviously not going to be able to recreate the sedimentation of a rock being perfectly sliced, right? But what you can do is you can do all types of like-minded, you know, if you will, sedimentation experiments. And I'll tell you some, again, I do with the little kids, and then we've done more involved things with the bigger kids. If you want a fun afternoon, here's what you do. For the little kids, I would give them some jars, and you can, you know, take that recycle bin and have another bin just for your science activities, like that big glass mayonnaise jar or whatever big glass jar that you can save. And then you go scoop up some things. So you do some study. Okay, so what do you find on the ground or on the earth? You know, there's going to be chunks of grass. There's going to be some sticks and stones and dirt, and you just collect these things, you know, a little shovel full of dirt, a little scoop of some sand if you find it that's a little bit different texture, some rocks, some sticks, and then you fill it with water and you have them shake it and then just leave it there and observe it. Now, with little kids, you're going to have to put it somewhere higher because they're going to want to keep shaking it. Again, the voice of experience, unless your little kids are more patient than mine are and would be willing to sit there and just watch it, because it takes about 12 hours for all of the layers to totally form some sort of a layered sedimentation. For the older kids, I've given them huge metal pans. You know, I'm Italian, so we have these huge lasagna pans that we use that are pretty like 3-inch deep. And if you don't want to use your good baking pans, you know, you might have a plastic bin or something like that. And then you just put it at a little bit of an incline, and you give them some things like, and you know, when I say give them, mine are collecting, you know, and I'm usually sitting on the deck or walking around with them. But you would have them collect again some things from the yard. If you live in a perfectly manicured subdivision, you might have to go to on a nature walk. Or, you know, maybe if you're somewhere out that you can drive and get some of these things. And so you would do some things, like you would get sand, you would get gravel, some rocks, some bigger rocks, some sticks, and you would say to them, you are going to try to keep your land from moving in a rainstorm. So you have them set up these barriers. So they're going to have sand and rocks and stones, and they are going to think that nothing is going to wash this away because they've got it shored up really well. And then you give them a bucket with some holes at the bottom. You can use an orange juice container, any kind of plastic container, or even quart container from your milk, you know, and just poke some holes at the bottom and let it rain on the sedimentation and just have them watch it. And it's amazing because they'll see the sediment run. They can get discouraged by this, especially when they're younger. You may need to help them a little bit or help them think through some ways to shore it up and make it better. But I'm telling you, by their third and fourth try at this, they get really, really good at it. They can figure out, you know, what is going to hold up in the rain and what isn't. And they'll understand. Recently in the news, there was this huge flood that happened and just wiped out some houses and some things. It was tragic in Washington State. And that kind of devastation, you know, is happening all over, where that, you know, torrential rain happens, or there's mudslides because of snow melting and things like that, or a lot of rain. And so, you know, the kids will understand that. They'll see it on the news and they'll say, wow, we did something like that. And that is, you know, there should have been some precautions for some things in that area if that was known to happen. And so it will help them to think. And then, you know, you go through your procedure. You take steps on, you know, doing your experimentation. You can help the kids write them down. You test their ideas. You observe and organize the data, and then you write a synopsis or a conclusion. And I'm talking about when they're little, one sentence, you know, did your idea work? Didn't it work? What would you do differently? Well, we are out of time. That is all I have for you today, and I hope you enjoyed this session. You can visit mediaangels.com for more information about my book, The Teaching Science and Having Fun, and The Creation Geology are both available to you, and I really didn't do either of those books justice. And hopefully you'll connect with me. I'm all over social media, or you can drop me an email. You can reach me via my website at mediaangels.com. All right, God bless, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at mediaangels.com and thevintagehomeschoolmoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.